If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.
Priestess and the Cauldron, a podcast featuring Elvira Love and Phoenix Lafay, two out-of-the-broom-closet professional witches with over 70 years combined experience of making magic. This is a show on the LMC Radio Network. During each show, Elvira and Phoenix will help you create rituals, make spells, make potions, and much more besides. They'll spend time speaking about different goddesses from all over the world, paying attention to the ancient reverence of long ago cultures and infusing it with a modern perspective. Elvira, Phoenix, take it away.
Well, I'm ready to take it away.
Yay!
So we are here, actually, this moment, sitting across from each other, as we have had some very interesting recording sessions for these shows the last few weeks. It's really nice to see you, literally.
Yay!
Oh, hello. So, as always, we are in the process of this particular show. We will be looking at another tradition, but before we jump in, we always try and touch base with what's happened in our world since the last time.
Yes.
And I'm just waiting with bated breath to find out how your week went.
I have no idea. My week was swell, I guess.
Really?
It's busy time of the year and getting ready for the holidays and the Goddess Craft Fair that's happening in Sebastopol next weekend. You know, all of the hustle and bustle.
Yes.
All of that. It's pretty much it at the moment. Just lots of prep.
Mm-hmm.
We make a lot of products at Milk and Honey, so I've been stocking up on my ingredients because I haven't had to make things in a couple of weeks. And when I went to check my stores, I was like, oh, I'm out of this herb and this oil and this and this and this and this and this and this and this.
So, kind of feels weird.
Yeah.
Like naked.
Yeah, so I had to get quite a big herb order in today, and I got some essential oils to make our sprays and oil blends, so that'll be happening this coming week when everything arrives.
Good.
So that's always fun, but, you know, it's a lot of prep, little elves at in the kitchen working away. How are you, Elvira?
Oh, hey, you know, I'm doing fine, actually. This week has been full of retrograde things before retrograde Mercury retrograde hits. And it was interesting because I had a client last Saturday. We were talking about it, and it's like she was going, I feel this and this, and I'm going, yeah, because a lot of us that are more aware of the energy start to feel the disjointed energy start to come in.
Yeah.
And then literally the last week of whatever the retrograde is, especially Mercury being short, you feel like, oh, nothing, you know, like it's almost over because you're so used to the process. But you know, it's just been strange people talking to you and having different things happen, and, you know, clients that are coming back out of nowhere because their world needs to have a tune-up or whatever. So, it, you know, that's been it. And then it's just a lot of, just like you, prep work. I don't have a retail store, but it's prep work for, you know, the holiday, getting the gifts in order. And since I'm obviously going to be going out of town, making sure that everything is being sent and it's been received and, you know, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I was... I'm not quite in the holiday spirit, like, wow, but, you know, I think by Sunday when I start pulling all my Christmas stuff out, I'm going to start throwing on every DVD that I have that's Christmas, which is a lot, starting with the black and white ones and going from there. I actually, my daughter pulled her stuff out, and she was talking to me. She says, we're going to get a real Christmas tree. Because up till now, her husband wasn't enthused about it, and for whatever reason. So she got that, and I asked her some questions, because every year I try to stock her up with Christmas DVDs. Because she remembers, like, she will not, Christmas is not Christmas unless she watches White Christmas with Bing Crosby and all of those people. And she even said that to me. She said, well, it isn't Christmas until I've actually watched. Because she remembers I had that on so often, and I would, because we didn't have real TV. We were on VHSs because we were in a canyon. But it was, that was Christmas, and she remembered my getting decorating up done and everything. And she's, she does the same. I feel like I've inspired her to continue the over-decoration. She'll decorate like I decorate bathrooms with Christmas. I will decorate everywhere. You better watch out walking in. I might decorate you. And she does the same thing. So I was just excited about watching this. And we did a little, you know, video chat. And so, of course, that was really fun. I get all excited when that happens. And who knows, I never know if I go back there to get a white Christmas. You know, because that's their, that they get snow there.
You won't get that where we are.
No. Which I'm grateful for. You know, it does kind of, anyway. So, shall we dive in? Or paddle in?
Let's do it.
Reclaiming, that is our tradition that we are talking about.
Yes, our ongoing exploration of different traditions of witchcraft. We come to the reclaiming tradition of witchcraft. And I will admit, I did no research. I took no notes. I am completely ill-prepared. But this is my home tradition, so I better know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, she told me that, and I giggled. Giggled, mind you, because this is something she teaches witch camp. She is part of this. She, I just thought, well, if you had to sit down and do notes, we're in trouble.
Yeah, I should know.
Yeah, well,
there's like date. I'm bad with dates. I've always been bad with dates, like, you know, historically. So,
well, I can tell you, it was founded in 1979.
79,
Yep, that's what it says right here.
Nice.
Yep. So it was founded, and of course, it went on. It was in San Francisco.
Right. This is a tradition that started in the Bay Area of California, the San Francisco Bay Area. It's not, I mean, I guess we could argue if this is the first tradition to start in the Bay Area or not, but during the late 70s, there was a really big movement in this area, and where, because Elvira and I live in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Yes, we do.
So there was a big movement of witchcraft, really, witchcraft and paganism and alternative spirituality and feminism, that second wave of feminism, and what was started, and I've heard 77, I've heard 78, I've heard 79.
Well, yeah, they have, like, it says the context of the Reclaiming Collective, 1978 to 1997, and then, of course, it says founded in 1979, and then it says over here, in the summer of 1980, they, Diane Baker and Starhawk started to blah, blah, blah. So pick your date.
Yeah, one of those years. And what's interesting is Elvira used the word collective, because at the beginning, in the late 70s and the early 80s, Starhawk and Diane Baker are considered the foremothers of reclaiming, but there were others. Rose May Dance was around in those early days. Pandora O'Malley was around in those early days. Maka Nightmare was around in those early days. And there are others whose names I don't know off the top of my head. I know Bone Blossom is one, and there's another person that's like floating around in there that I should be able to name. But there was several women, and what mostly what was happening is, especially Starhawk, who the Spiral Dance was published in what, 81, really early,
very early.
This group of people were taking feminist workshops together in colleges. And these women were learning from Victor and Cora Anderson,
right,
who were doing the fairy tradition.
Right.
And so, and Starhawk also was learning from Z Budapest, who is a psionic witch practitioner.
Right.
So they sort of, these women became friends. They started teaching each other the skills they were learning. Starhawk was teaching classes on women's spirituality. And it just sort of became this thing. It
right.
kind of fell together where they would do rituals together and they would go to Ocean Beach for winter solstice and all get naked and run into the ocean and then come back and have a bonfire. And it just kind of started to come together, and it was a collective. And the collective continued to grow.
Right.
The whole thing of reclaiming is there is no hierarchy.
Right.
No one is in charge. It was meant to stay as a collective. Women were always the majority, and that's still true today. Women and gay men and are, you know, that's kind of the tier. It's gay men and then the few heterosexual men
kind of hang out down
hang
there.
Out.
So.
And that's grown, really, but not as much as the other sort of labels we could put on people.
Right, right. And I know that from the different things they're talking about is that the things that you have mentioned in previous talks were part of the different classes they started putting together. And
right.
they kind of, as you said, they grew from, like, the elements of magic, you know,
yeah.
the elements, the four, the five elements, and then it went into the Iron Pentacle and
yep.
the Pearl Pentacle.
Right.
So,
right.
So we have an audience, so you may hear little bits and pieces of thoughts
background.
That get thrown out. So
the elements of magic class is sort of it's the intro to reclaiming style magic, right?
Right.
And you
right.
can find, it, and now, you know, it's 2017 now, you can find reclaiming classes being taught all over the world. There's reclaiming classes on the East Coast, the West Coast, the Midwest, Europe, Australia,
yes.
South America and Brazil. So it's grown a lot from
it's international.
Yeah, from the Bay Area in the late 70s to everywhere in 2017.
Right.
And Elements of Magic is that introductory class.
Right.
And then, as you mentioned, the Iron Pentacle and the Pentacle of Pearl, which actually come from the fairy tradition.
See, I didn't know that it came from the fairy tradition. I know that when you were talking about it, it came, you know, it was like, oh, this is this and this. And then I started reading a little bit more about it because obviously I am not as knowledgeable about this tradition or the things because I haven't studied it. But then I began to go, oh, that's kind of the outside version of what the Iron Pentacle is, the internal version
yeah.
of what you do. With exploration and your personal ethics and things that you're looking at.
Right. Right. So the Iron and the Pearl Pentacles, and these are workshops that are often taught pretty regularly around the world.
You do it.
I do. I teach. I'm starting an Iron Pentacle in January, and they're often taught in a six-week format or
right.
weekend intensives.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is the Rites of Passage class, which is really about recognizing how we're always in rites of passages and honoring them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of dream work, too, that happens
mm-hmm.
in that workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a newer workshop, the community workshop. And so a lot of this is because reclaiming works with consensus process.
Right.
And we're non-hierarchical, and it's an anarchist tradition. So you're going to get to hear me talk about all the things I love about reclaiming and all the things that make me freaking bananas about reclaiming. And one of those things is, you know, consensus process, anarchist tradition, non-hierarchical. I love it, and it makes me bananas sometimes.
Well, because it's very ponderous and very slow.
It is. Everyone gets heard.
Yes.
Ideally.
Yes. If you're going to get everyone heard. And that's the problem, and that's the joy of it.
Absolutely.
You know, you have both. So in reality, when I was reading this, I was going, this is really great. I mean, it's very tribal.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, you know, that group point of reference.
Yes.
But
yeah.
You have a large group with a lot of consensus,
yeah.
And it comes to a long time.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I'm going to throw in something that may not even have anything to do with it, but it does in my mind, and that is, you look at what they're doing in the Senate and the House of Representatives, especially the House of Representatives. It's slow. It's ponderous. Yes, these are one people, certain number of people that are there.
Yeah.
But they're spending a ton of time over minutia and everything.
Right.
So.
Right. And that's majority, right? So with consensus, everyone has to agree or it doesn't happen.
Exactly.
And so that requires... That requires process, and that requires being right-sized, and that requires being honest, and that requires speaking up when you aren't in alignment with something, and that requires holding people accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard. It's
mm-hmm.
hard. And the part, as a community member of this tradition,
mm-hmm.
it's beautiful. It's hard work, but it makes it worth it when everyone is right-sized and speaking honestly. And what's challenging and curious about it is it's not like, because there's no hierarchy, it's not like California and the Bay Area is the mothership. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
We're all autonomous. So
mm-hmm.
so San Francisco Bay Area is a group, but the North Bay, where we live, we're our own group.
Right.
And Portland has their own group, and Seattle and BC have a group, and Minneapolis has a group, and Texas has a group, and on and on and on and on and on. I don't need to name all these.
Right. So then if all of these are singular groups,
mm-hmm.
then if they choose to come together as a huge group,
right.
then it becomes even more.
Right. And that does happen. In the last decade or so, there's been a event called Dandelion,
mm-hmm.
and it's for worldwide reclaiming people to attend, where
mm-hmm.
we can talk about process and potentially, if possible, make decisions
mm-hmm.
about the global reclaiming system. Because in 1978 or whatever, we
right.
were a collective.
Right.
But we grew and grew and grew and spread,
mm-hmm.
and people moved away, and people read Starhawk's book, The Spiral Dance, and
right.
invited her to teach, and then started their own groups in London or
mm-hmm.
whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And by the late 90s, it was clear that it was actually too big to be called a collective anymore.
Right.
So the collective was officially disbanded.
Right.
And it became a tradition.
Right.
Now it's the reclaiming tradition instead of the reclaiming collective. And so all of these disparate groups work autonomously. We don't have one 501 status. San Francisco has their own. There's one in Detroit. There's
mm-hmm.
one in New York, blah, blah,
mm-hmm.
blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But they all do it their own way.
Right.
Every community does it their own way. The one thing that unifies us as reclaiming witches is the principles of unity.
Which, I believe,
yeah.
was also modified
yes.
in terms of the sexuality.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, so the Principles of Unity is a long document.
Right.
I'm not going to read it.
No.
Feel free to go onto the reclaiming.org website
mm-hmm.
if you are interested
mm-hmm.
in Principles of Unity. But
mm-hmm.
it basically says this is what it means to be a reclaiming witch.
Right.
And it talks about some of the things we're going to talk about on this radio program. And that was put into place in the late 90s. And then 5 years ago?
Yeah, about.
Something like that. It
yeah.
was ratified.
Yeah.
Because it was very binary in language. And reclaiming, and I believe this to be true. I would love to, if someone disagrees with me, I would love to hear
your take on it.
Yeah. Reclaiming has been at the forefront of trans acceptance.
Right.
Since I can't even remember when. Like, I feel like reclaiming has been helping trans inclusivity happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so part of the Principles of Unity was very binary in gender around deity.
Right,
and
right.
very binary around sexuality and gender terms.
Mm-hmm.
So the language was expanded to say God, goddess, and mysterious ones.
Right.
And to take gender out of deity.
Right.
And even there are reclaimers who don't believe in deity.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to make that more all-encompassing.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
the language was changed to say that we welcome all races, all creeds, all genders, all gender histories,
mm-hmm.
all sexualities, blah,
mm-hmm.
blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
we added that gender inclusivity language,
right.
which is, I'm really proud of that, actually.
I think it really takes a big step,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you have, okay, you have different traditions, some of
yeah.
which we've talked about, that are definitely male, female, priest, priestess
yeah.
orientated.
Yeah.
Then you have some that are Dionic,
yeah.
which, of course, we've mentioned the Budapest. And then you have ones where they are, I'm, you know, we have the traditions that are bringing forth the ability to be more one gender specific.
Right.
All right. Then you have ones that now with this you're saying it is all, it is
yeah.
everything, it is anything
right.
within the dynamics because it is, we are all representations
right.
of the one big source.
Right. And even that could be argued that,
uh-huh.
the thing I love and the thing that makes me bananas is it's an anarchist tradition. And so what I believe and what you believe could be the totally different things. You
mm-hmm.
could be a Jesus worshipping, hippie loving anarchist that lives in the city and loves, you know, organic broccoli or whatever. And I could be non-deist, living out in a commune in the woods and only using a compost toilet. And we could both be reclaiming witches.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That's it's beautiful, and there's not, you're not going to look at someone and go, oh, they're a reclaimer, because we're all so very different.
Right.
There isn't a unifying practice, but there is a unifying energy.
Right. And I think that's the biggest thing that I found resonated, is that it is the energy.
Yeah.
Whether how you have described it or how you hold it or whatever, it's the energy.
Yeah.
Which, if you look at what's out there, it is all one energy anyway. How it gets manifested and through what means.
Yeah.
So that kind of makes a point there.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that gives a sort of a history and an idea
right.
of where, you know, the things are. I found the classes that intrigued me, I mean, you
okay.
talked about the rites of passage, but then they talked about, I think, the different people, the different students, the holy terrors and the wind hags. And
these are the original covens.
Yes, the covens that yeah. really started, and I love the names of them.
I know.
I was like, wow, that's
yeah,
really
holy
cool.
The holy terrors and the wind hags are two of the original covens
yeah.
that started teaching elements. I have notes from Rose May Dance, who's one of the originators
mm-hmm.
of reclaiming, from 81.
Mm-hmm.
The original class syllabus of Elements of Magic, Iron Pentacle, and
wow.
Pearl. And the classes, that's the other thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
The class, if you take elements from me
mm-hmm.
and then you take it from someone else in a year from now, we're going to do some things the same, but it's going to be a completely different experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't ever teach by myself in reclaiming. We always have a co-facilitator, at least one, because
mm-hmm.
we share power.
Mm-hmm.
There's never one person in charge.
Mm-hmm.
There's never one person who has all the answers. It's always shared power.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always, we work with this principle, all of our rituals and workshops are EIEIO.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to try to remember what all this stands for. Energetic, inspirational,
mm-hmm.
ensemble,
mm-hmm.
organic is the O,
mm-hmm.
and I can't remember what the other I is. But basically, the whole point is we're an ecstatic tradition.
Right.
We may have a plan, but we don't read liturgy. We
right.
don't read ritual. We don't read class syllabus. We create it in
mm-hmm.
the moment.
Mm-hmm.
We let spirit speak through us.
Mm-hmm.
We let the energy of what needs to happen in the moment speak through us.
Right.
We have to be flexible
mm-hmm.
And pay attention to what the needs of that moment are.
Right.
And I've been to a lot of different tradition rituals. I've experienced a lot of different types of ritual. And I I say this every year at PantheaCon. There is no other tradition that raises energy like reclaiming.
Yeah.
Not the best at everything, but we're the best at that.
Yeah.
If you want to get your mind blown by a cone of power, go to a reclaiming ritual.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, look at what they were doing. They were out there protesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
About that, right?
Yeah, we really have to. I mean, it says right here, I love this, you know, prominently active in anti-nuclear civil disobedience in such places as Lawrence Livermore Lab and Diablo Canyon.
Yeah,
I
okay.
love that.
So I have this story.
Oh, good.
So I know a lot of the founders of Reclaiming. I'm blessed to have taught with some of them. I'm blessed to call some of them friends and initiators.
Mm-hmm.
I'm blessed. So, and I was working on this project for a while called Access Mundi, which is an online syllabus for Reclaiming. So I'm no longer involved because my life is too busy, and it's a great, great program.
Right.
So during this program, we were talking about all of the actions that,
right.
that early Reclaiming people were involved with, protests and, you know, being involved in that counterculture movement is really important. And the Lawrence Livermore Lab and many of the Diablo Canyon and a lot of these places that run on nuclear power or are nuclear power plants were heavily protested by early Reclaiming people.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a story about a group, a small, I don't remember if they were affinity group. Often
mm-hmm.
when you go to protests and you're with a large group, people will make these small affinity groups of 3 to 4 people.
Right.
So if shit hits the fan and everyone who's protesting needs to scatter, you stay with your affinity group.
Right.
So you're never alone. Right?
Right.
So I'm not sure if this spell was done by an affinity group or a coven, but they were working really hard to make Diablo Canyon not happen.
Mm-hmm.
So they had a mole inside that worked for the company,
mm-hmm.
and they were getting them information on when certain things were happening and what certain dates meetings were taking place and things like this. So they were doing all of this spell work to turn
mm-hmm.
it upside down.
Mm-hmm.
Turn it upside down, flip it on its head, make it stop, make it confused, all of this.
Right.
To this day, I love this. To this day, the building that the Diablo Canyon Center is upside down, it was built backwards.
Oh, my gosh.
Something happened in the plans.
Oh, my gosh.
And the building is built in reverse of what the original plan stated.
Oh, wow.
I love that story.
That's
so
great.
Much.
That's great.
There's all kinds of stuff like that in the early. And I... You know, in the early 80s, I was like 3, so I wouldn't have been able to
right.
have been involved in any of this.
Right.
But I love those old stories.
I know. It was funny because, well, see, I came up here officially in 1985, actually, and, you know, that was when I came here with my husband and I was pregnant and I had my daughter and we opened our metaphysical store and all,
yeah.
That was when I started to actively get involved with the different people and got to know what was happening. I was Southern California, which has also got its milieu of things.
Yeah.
But this became like I was really with the people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were enjoying ourselves totally. And so we may not have been participating in some of these things, but it was very real because we knew of them. We were, you know, on the periphery,
yeah.
so to speak.
And a lot of the places where there is a hub of reclaiming, there are public rituals happening.
Mm-hmm.
That's not true everywhere. You know, there's some thriving communities where they don't do public rituals, but a lot of places are doing public rituals. And if you go to the reclaiming.org website, you can plug into some of these communities.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, there's a lot in Europe. There's several different communities in Australia,
mm-hmm.
Brazil. I don't think there's any others in South America right now. Sometimes they come and go all along the West Coast,
mm-hmm.
all along the East Coast. And there used to be a stronger Midwest contingent, but that has waxed and waned over the
mm-hmm.
years.
Mm-hmm.
Texas, the Twin Cities, of course, there's a ton of pagans up in the Twin Cities,
mm-hmm.
and Chicago and Detroit. So, you know, there's...
Mm-hmm.
Canada, lots
yeah.
of different places in Canada.
Canada.
So there is a lot of reclaiming communities that you can tap into
mm-hmm.
if you are curious about learning more.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's good because I know that as I was thinking and moving into the realities of changing locations, I go to a place where, to me, it's going to be a little bit different. I'm thinking of this, so I need to look because I have no idea. You get into the South, you get into, you know, the border of Midwest and South. I don't know what's going on there.
Right.
I mean, I am aware of East Coast, West Coast, you know, as we say, the, you know, Detroit and, you know, Minneapolis, Minnesota, that area. So, you know, but who knows? It's kind of a interesting exploration.
Yeah.
So this will give me something to do on another point of reference while I'm waiting for my plane. So, but yeah, that was one of the things. And actually, I did find it. And it was just, you had improvisational and inspired.
Inspired. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a joke that is said in Reclaiming that if you do it once, it's innovation. If you do it twice, it's tradition.
Yeah.
Because we don't have liturgy. So there, if you go to a Beltane ritual 3 years in a row, it will be a different ritual every time. If you go to a Beltane ritual in three different communities in the same year, it's going to be three different rituals. There
mm-hmm.
There's very little repeat.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few things that you find over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
There are two traditions that are repeated. And the first is the actual spiral dance,
mm-hmm.
the dance of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah Hawk did not invent this dance, but she did definitely popularize it in
mm-hmm.
modern paganism.
Mm-hmm.
And it's spiral, you know, it's not a dance, really. It's a shuffle. You hold hands and you move, and there's this, like, kind of like the snake, you know, there's the leader, the head, and the tail, and the leader spirals in, and it is kind of a tricky thing if you've never led it before, because it's not a snake dance. There's
mm-hmm.
a little bit of math to it. And when the leader realizes that it's time, they turn in on the spiral, so then you are moving back out.
Right.
And it gives you an opportunity to look at every other person in that spiral. And typically, we're singing when this happens.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of moving. It can get a little psychedelic because faces are moving past
mm-hmm.
and everyone's smiling and
mm-hmm.
singing. And then when the leader, the head of the spiral, realizes it's time again, they turn again back on the spiral, and now they're going in again. And you get a second opportunity to look at everyone and
right.
spiral back into the center,
right?
And then when the spiral has unwound itself, everyone's again moving in the same direction. And by then, you've sung. Typically, the music starts to pick up a little bit. The tempo picks up a little bit. You can feel the energy
mm-hmm.
raising. It starts to get palpable.
Mm-hmm.
There's often drumming, and that's when that cone of power is built. And
mm-hmm.
that is a classic Reclaiming thing. It doesn't always happen, but it happens more often than not.
Right.
And then there is a ritual called Waters of the World.
Mm-hmm.
And this was started by Starhawk and Chief Louisa Teesh,
mm-hmm.
who is not a Reclaiming witch, but has been involved in
mm-hmm.
much Reclaiming stuff, especially
mm-hmm.
in the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And they traveled a lot. Louisa Teesh teaches in lots of places. If you've never heard of her, she is freaking amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I highly recommend it. Read her books. Listen to her talk.
Jambalaya
is one of her books. Yeah, she's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I took a workshop from her. It was awesome. She's
mm-hmm.
awesome. Anyway, she travels a lot. Starhawk travels a lot. And they started bringing each other water from
mm-hmm.
the places where they traveled.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, okay, I got jars of water. What the hell am I going to do with all this water? And so they just, Starhawk came back from someplace in South America where the water was being poisoned because of logging and
mm-hmm.
greed and,
yes.
you know, things like that. And so they decided to take some of this poisoned water and combine it with healthy, clean water and
mm-hmm.
do a ritual for it.
Mm-hmm.
And now this happens at Imbolc every year
mm-hmm.
in the Bay Area
mm-hmm.
and some other communities too. But every year in San Francisco, they do Waters of the World, and people bring water from all over the world, and it gets combined into a well, basically. A well is created, and it is believed that all by doing this magic, all water will be clean. All water is one water. Water is life.
Mm-hmm.
May all the waters run free, and may all the waters be free.
Right.
Right. So the goal of this spell and this ritual is to clean the waters of the earth. And it's been going on, I want to say, when did Reagan get elected? 80 or 84?
Somewhere in there.
So that's when this ritual started.
Yeah.
It was right after the Reagan election.
Wow.
When people were
starting to
terrified for the future.
Yeah.
Who knew it could get so much worse?
That's what I was going to say. She took the words right out of my mouth.
I know.
I know.
I was saying that the other day. I thought I couldn't be more embarrassed of George Bush. Boy, the universe really had to
think of what's going on, and then we'll break. think of what's going on. We have got one of the most buffoon presidents.
Yeah.
Now, we thought that different ones had different problems that were so glaring and disgusting, and now what we've got is the basis of the base.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at anything, even if you're looking at somebody who's an addict, if you get to the bottom of that well, you have nothing but to look upwards and to start moving forward. So if we're going to look at it from a more positive way, we'll climb our way out of this. We will still be here. We will have that. But you're right. Getting worse is where we are now.
Yeah.
And on that, I think we should do a break.
All right. And then I'll talk about whiskey.
Oh, goody.
Okay.
All right.
You're listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Stay tuned, as more magic is coming your way right after these messages.
The LMC Radio Network is a media alliance whose excellent shows include The Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour with Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie, Sundays 3 to 4:30, The Crystal Silence League Hour with John St. Germain, Tuesdays 5 to 6, Fit and Foxy, Madame Nadia and Jaya Danya, Wednesdays 6 to 7, and The Witch, the Priestess, and the Cauldron with Elvira Love and Phoenix LeFay, Fridays 6 to 7. All times Pacific, add 3 hours for Eastern, sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com.
We're short. We're here.
We're back.
We're back. And now, Witch Camp.
Witch Camp. I don't know when Witch Camp started. It's been at least 30 years. I think BC Witch Camp says that they're on their 31st year this year, 31st
okay.
or 32nd.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, they did these six-week classes where, you know, elements of magic and then later iron and pearl and then later rites of passage. And there people were saying, we love these six-week classes, but it would be great if we could get together and do magic and live in community for like a week.
Right.
We should do like a witch camp. And so a witch camp was born.
Right.
And witch camp now happens all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's spread. BC Witch Camp, I believe, is the oldest, followed closely by California Witch Camp.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other camps, you know, are somewhere after that. I think the youngest camp is Maine Witch Camp, which started this year in 2017.
Wow. Yeah. All right.
There's still new camps being born and camps going into hiatus. There's a Tejas Witch Camp that went into hiatus for about 5 years and just restarted 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, things come cyclically. Basically, a witch camp is an intensive, and
right.
They're usually 5 to 7 days. Some of
mm-hmm.
them are a little bit shorter,
mm-hmm.
but it's 7 days of ritual every night, workshops every day,
mm-hmm.
shared food,
mm-hmm.
shared space, shared
mm-hmm.
experience, and you know, you basically live in a bubble for 7 days
mm-hmm.
with these 100 other people, 50 to 100 other people going through a similar experience.
Mm-hmm.
Most often at witch camp, a story or a myth is chosen.
Right.
For example, I taught at California Witch Camp this past summer,
mm-hmm.
and we were working with Ariadne and the Minotaur as our myth.
Right.
So we we encourage the folks who are coming as participants to step into this myth and to explore the labyrinth and to face the Minotaur and to look at how are you the Minotaur and how are you the one facing the monster. And
right.
so we step into this mythopoetic realm in order to do healing on ourselves, healing on the planet, to become stronger witches, to do magic. I mean, it is intense. It is intense, and it can really be life-changing. It is one of my favorite things ever.
Interesting. I know that somewhere in one of my wanderings or readings, it talks about the different elements that have, you know, been influencing, you know, like the Religious Society of Friends, the Quakers.
Yes.
But the one thing that caught my mind was that there was the Hawaiian.
Yeah.
Part of, you know,
well,
what has...
I can explain that.
Well, that's good, because then I will say my thoughts on that. But I'll let you explain first, because it may sound stupid after what you said.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So the reason there is a Hawaiian influence in reclaiming is
right.
because of fairy, because Victor Anderson borrowed things from the Hawaiian tradition, like the kala. Kala is a basically kind of like a water blessing where you release into the water what you need to change. Then the water is transmutated, and then you then drink that water back in to cleanse and purify your mind, body, and spirit.
Right.
So that is, kala is really the only Hawaiian influence that I know of. There could definitely be others, but they don't impact me.
Right.
You know?
Understandable. Well, it's interesting because you talk about witch camp. And when I trained with one of the last living, you know, lineaged kahunas, it was a navigational kahuna. And what we would do is literally we would be there for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And we would live and eat together
right.
for 2 weeks.
Right.
And we would do the flying. We would do the whole process. There would be all these different things. He took and did smaller workshops for, like, weeks. But the one that was the primary one that busted doors down for all of the issues that you had and got you in tune with the energy and, you know, moved it was the two-week intensive. And I thought of that when I was hearing that, what you were saying, as well as what I was reading about the witch camp, because it was a bubble.
Right.
You know, we never saw the outside world. We would, we were told to go to the ocean, and we would have to do this at 6 o'clock in the morning and swim in the ocean because we had to clear out all the energy, and the ocean is the salt water.
Right.
And I could tell you some of it was damn cold, and you'd think Hawaii was warm, and then you'd come back, and then you'd get ready, and you go to family breakfast, and then you would clear it off, and then you would go in, and you would get some, you don't get a lot of talking, you just get a lot of work, like
right.
a lot of energy, a lot of movement, and then, you know, then you get your break, and then you have to go again to the ocean, and then you come back, you know, and it's very... There's a flow, so
right.
it's very interesting that though the way witch camps are taught is that it is the rituals, it is the myth, it is the gathering, it is the same concept of immersing yourself in that energy.
Yeah, and each witch camp is, it's, again, autonomous, and different witch camps work different ways. For example, California Camp is owned by one particular person. She is the main organizer. She paid the original organizers to have rights to the name and to the processing. So she works with groups. She doesn't do it all on her own, and she asks for input, and she hires people to do specific tasks. But she owns the rights to California Witch Camp. Spiral Heart Camp, which happens in Pennsylvania, is more of a collective. Everything is done by a group. No one has ownership. And then there's a camp in Oregon, Free Camp, where people just show up. Nobody, you pay if you can. If you can't, you don't. You bring food if you've got it. If you don't, the community supports you. Like, it's literally a free collective. And so each camp works their own way. They're all autonomous. But the pattern of how camp unfolds is pretty across the board. You know, you arrive, whatever the campground is like, you get your home space, your home base, foods or meals are all prepared, and the community eats together. path or workshops, you know, happen in the morning by specific facilitators. Then there's space in the afternoon to do what you want. And then there's evening ritual that follows that myth or story, that
right.
myth or story of that camp
mm-hmm.
for that year.
Mm-hmm.
And that is pretty much across the board.
Mm-hmm.
So that also can impact, you know, like, for example, winter camp, which happens in Wisconsin in February.
Oof.
They are working with Inanna and the descent of Inanna as their myth this year.
Yes.
So if you're like, hey, Inanna's my lady, I want to spend a week doing magic with Inanna,
mm-hmm.
then you might choose to go to Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
you know? Or if you live in Wisconsin and you always go to winter camp, but you're not really interested in Inanna, then maybe you don't go that year and you try a different camp,
mm-hmm.
you know? So
mm-hmm.
so even within the sameness, there's a lot of difference,
right.
a lot of possibility.
Well, and that's good because, as you know and I know, different mythos impact us differently
yep.
and create different breakthroughs.
Absolutely.
And that's the other thing I was interested in, is because this technically is not an initiatory
yes.
Tradition.
Funny, I was totally going to bring that up.
We're on the same path.
Yes.
Is that you can explain what the initiation process is if
sort of.
It is, meaning the skeleton process
yes.
Of that, because it sounded, when I was reading it, it was like, this is viable,
yeah.
again, likening
yeah.
it to the one thing that I have experienced in tradition is very Hawaiian in many ways because
mm-hmm.
of, you know, it isn't that you, we could never become Hawaiian kahunas, really, because we do not know the blood, the energy,
yeah.
the tradition.
Right.
We are not part of that DNA.
Right.
And yes, there is a point where you have to say that, but you go through the process and you experience it, and so initiations take place, whether
yeah.
they are officially saying, I have this little title, or it was an experience that initiated us into
right.
the place of our darkest fear at that moment.
Right. Yeah.
Now I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah. yeah. And I'm initiated into a few different traditions.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I have this very interesting, I don't know, more global, that might not be the right word, but I have a different experience of initiation than I think the average witch pagan practitioner, because I do have these different
mm-hmm.
styles.
Mm-hmm.
And in many traditions, you get initiated into something.
Right.
Into the mysteries, into the next level, into the next elevation. You can't attend a ritual until you're initiated. It unlocks the key to something.
Hierarchical.
Right. And reclaiming is non-hierarchical.
Right.
So you don't have to be initiated to teach in reclaiming.
Right.
You don't have to be initiated to go to a witch camp. You don't get any secret keys. My partner, Guion, is also a teacher in reclaiming, and he often jokes, you don't get the keys to Starhawk's truck once you're initiated. there's nothing cool about it. But it is more personal of a process
mm-hmm.
than any other initiation I've been through.
Right.
The initiation is tailored to the initiate.
Right.
And that doesn't happen, at least not so far in my experience, in other traditions. And the thing is, also what's interesting is we don't wear specific badges that says, I'm initiated or anything like that. So if you want reclaiming initiation, you have to seek out initiators.
Right.
You have to ask
right.
for initiation. And ideally, you have to ask at least 3 people to be on your initiation team.
How neat.
And to hold you through this process. And it's really scary
mm-hmm.
to ask someone to be on your initiation team and to be prepared to hear them say no, and may or may not tell you why they've said no,
mm-hmm.
or for them to tell you to ask again in 3 months or whatever. It's really scary.
Mm-hmm.
And then your initiators give you challenges.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ideally you get to know each other and they start to see some of your growing edges,
mm-hmm.
and they give you challenges to help you strengthen those growing edges, because initiation, just like other traditions, is a death and rebirth rite.
Right.
So the challenges process is what steals you to be prepared to die and
mm-hmm.
be reborn.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens in the actual ritual, I can't talk about, that is the one thing in reclaiming that is kept a secret. Other reclaiming witches are very open about it, but and they'll talk about it, but I don't, because it was such a powerful experience for me. If I had known everything that was going to happen in that ritual, it would have lost some of the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't tell people what happened
mm-hmm.
in the ritual. But the challenge process can take as long as it takes. It's
right.
not like, okay, well, in a year we'll do your ritual or whatever. In fact, on average, people are in their initiation for about 3 years
mm-hmm.
is usually the average.
But if you think about it,
yeah.
realistically, when you go through something in your life, I'm going to use a personal experience. If after Matt died and I went through my 1 year of
yeah.
grieving and mourning of immediate, of all the firsts that never he would be here again.
Right.
I didn't stop. It became a longer process.
Yeah.
It became different things.
Absolutely.
And that was an initiation in its own right in a death rebirth, not just the death of your partner, but the death of your relationship and who you, you know, the identity you had at that moment and then what you change and what you go through.
Yeah.
So it is very true that process you talk about that is created within an initiation process for reclaiming mm-hmm. is very much what happens in life.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I feel that is such a great way to focus on something.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're also guided.
Yeah.
There are certain things that you have. You have the initiators. You have people that are there, but they're not going to be right there holding your hand.
Mm-hmm.
But you have something to give a container to while you go through, when in real life, you really don't have a container.
Right, and that's actually funny. One of my initiators said, you know, treasure this time when you're in your initiation because you can blame everything on it. It frames everything.
Yes.
Like, oh, I'm in my initiation. That's why this thing is happening, and it's so hard right now because
mm-hmm.
you can frame everything inside
mm-hmm.
that initiation. And then when it's over, it's just life.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Then it's
right.
just life. But we're always going through initiations in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
And my initiation was very powerful. And in comparison to all of my initiations have been powerful, but I feel like my reclaiming initiation was mine,
mm-hmm.
and it was more intense in that way
more than personal.
The others I've been
yeah.
through. And I have also now had the pleasure of being an initiator in the
mm-hmm.
reclaiming tradition, and every time I do the ritual for another human with their team, I'm blown away by what it does and how I think, God, I don't remember this part.
Mm-hmm.
Every time there's something that happens where I go, oh, I forgot that we do it like this. And I have like a spark of a dream memory
right.
that comes back.
Right.
And I love it. It's
mm-hmm.
it's really powerful. I think it's the most powerful. Between witch camp and initiation, I think that's the most powerful magic reclaiming does.
Right. Well, it's interesting because from the information, when Starhawk was going for her counseling degree and she wound up, which I actually have the books, the hardcover books, Dreaming the Dark
yeah.
and Truth or Dare.
Truth or Dare is a really good book.
Yeah.
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 So it was fascinating that she took for her and for as one of the people of this collective, which became more than, you know, that later. But she took some of this information and put it with the spirituality and put it with the political economic consciousness that she was part of and
yeah.
believed in. And again, it became a living, breathing process for the now.
Yeah.
It wasn't taking something, like we've been talking a lot about traditions that we don't know what they were like back when they were originally done in, you know, way back time, you know. And so we bring it forward. And I guess in one way, and this is going to be one of those where we can get a little hot under the collar, when you're saying it's neo-pagan,
yeah, yeah.
it is.
Right.
Because it's living.
Right.
It's breathing.
Yes.
It's alive. It's
yes.
its structures are open.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's one of the ways that reclaiming continues to be powerful is
mm-hmm.
that, and honestly, I mean, to be really transparent, one of my issues with reclaiming is like, okay, I've done the core classes, I've gone to witch camp, I'm doing these things, I'm attending public ritual, now what? Like,
mm-hmm.
what's the next level?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm that kind of person, I'm always looking for the next challenge. And that's not here, that's your job.
Right.
What is the next level for you?
Right.
If there's something more you want, we'll create it.
Right.
And that's amazing and very empowering and frustrating.
Of course.
But reclaiming is continuing to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
It does continue to shift and change and grow based on the needs of community.
Right.
Like we started with talking about trans inclusivity and really making it open and available and accessible.
Mm-hmm.
Right now there's a huge movement about anti-racism and being really clear, reclaiming is a very white bread tradition. There's a lot of white folks in reclaiming. That's not to say everyone in reclaiming is white, but we're working really hard right now to recognize why is that? How do we engage more people of color? How do we keep more people of color engaged in reclaiming? What are we not doing? What is missing?
Mm-hmm.
And so there are some folks, some people of color who have really stepped forward and have been really brave and started to put on workshops about how we do that kind of work. And that's hard shit to
mm-hmm.
look at.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do that very well, especially in America. We don't look at those things very easily. And I feel like reclaiming is really willing to look at the hard stuff and
mm-hmm.
ask questions and try to do better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, what's going to keep it alive.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. And I think that I do have to ask a question. So
yeah.
This is my question to you as a reclaimer person.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Is there a lot of infighting?
Well,
I mean, in the sense
yes
that
and no.
yes and no. I mean, there is a lot of infighting in some traditions. I mean, there's always infighting, no matter what, because everybody, you know, there's these little pockets. But I'm
yeah.
curious if it's more, if it is a because of its openness, because of its ability to be without the hierarchical consciousness or the rules and regulations that, you know, structure a lot of things,
yeah.
if there is still infighting about who's better or who's
mm-hmm.
more real
mm-hmm.
or I'm a true reclaimer and you're not.
Gotcha. No, that I don't see.
Okay.
There's infighting because it's community.
Right.
You know? So just like anything else where you have people's stuff.
Right.
Right? But I have not encountered a lot of I'm truer than you, or I've been doing this longer than you, or, you know, I've taught elements of magic 20 times and you've only taught it 19.
Right.
There may be some of that individuals hold because they're still working with their shadow.
Right.
I've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see anyone trying to be like Queen Bee because, you know, they have this much experience or they met Starhawk at 1982 and, you know, whatever.
Right.
There was a period of time where that was true.
Mm-hmm.
In the late 90s and maybe even in the early 2000s, it's what I call the diva time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what I actually think is reclaiming is evolving as a tradition going through age.
Yes.
Like literally. So in the 90s, we were like in our 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So there were the reclaiming tradition was in its 20s,
mm-hmm.
you know? So there were some divas, like a 20-year-old might be.
Right.
Looking at how flash and fancy and how
right.
much attention they got, very sort of juvenile behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're in our 40s, and that's kind of a waste of time,
mm-hmm.
you know? So as a tradition, we've evolved. And where it used to be, there were moments where it was like, look how awesome I am. Now it's, who can I bring along with me and help them achieve their awesome so
right.
I can step back.
Right.
And I've noticed that shift a lot because I've been around reclaiming since 1995.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, a lot of this was on the periphery.
Mm-hmm.
But since I started teaching, which was in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
2000.
She's okay. She's just, you know, going through warp drive.
Right. In 2010 is when I started teaching and reclaiming, and
mm-hmm.
I've not encountered that.
Yeah. Well, that's a question because there's so much of that out there,
mm-hmm.
and it's prevalent in so many
yeah.
traditions and people's structures that, you know, you kind of go, can we get off our little areas here and realize the bigger picture?
And I've definitely encountered other traditions have an attitude towards reclaiming.
Yes.
Like, oh, you're fluffy bunnies, or
yeah.
oh, you're the hippies, or you're the
right.
activists.
Yeah.
You're not the real witches or the real pagans. And often
mm-hmm.
that comes from people who are in very strict traditions.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care. Like, whatever.
Yeah.
You can totally have your opinions. I'm also gardenarian, so I'm in a very strict tradition. It's polar opposite of reclaiming.
Right, but it's balance. Think of what you personally just did within your own structure.
Absolutely.
And people can do that.
Yep.
You can have the structure, and then you can have the fluidity. And that's really, we have to know we can't walk out into traffic without the stop signs or the lights and expect somebody's going to actually not, you know, officially slam into us.
Right.
We'd be lucky if they see us.
Yeah.
So that's why there's structure and then yet the fluidity of knowing when you can dodge around them.
Yep. And reclaiming really honors and encourages people to work on themselves,
mm-hmm.
to strengthen their the things that make them shine,
mm-hmm.
to look at their shadows, to look at their growing edges and work on those growing edges. It really encourages self-reflection. And that's important because even if you are a witch and all you care about is doing spell work, you don't want any of the religious part of it. The stronger you are as a human being, the stronger your spell work will be.
Mm-hmm.
So a little self-reflection and a little awareness of your shortcomings and a little willingness to work on those is gives you power.
And I think that should be the biggest, boldest statement in any of the spiritual traditions and any of the traditions of helping people.
Right.
Is work on yourself.
Absolutely.
Consistently and get out of your own ego.
Yep, absolutely. Ego is
mm-hmm.
a trouble.
Mm-hmm.
It's about being right-sized. And that's a reclaiming thing, one of those sort of key words that you hear a lot is being right-sized. And we have a tendency to, this is the work of Iron Pentacle, of being really inflated and thinking we're hot shit and nothing can touch us,
mm-hmm.
and being really deflated and not recognizing how amazing we are.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're right-sized, we hold that in balance.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes work.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's easy to be right-sized, but most of the time it's not. Most of the time you have to, I am naturally a little bit deflated,
mm-hmm.
and so I have to take a breath and take a moment, and I'll run Iron Pentacle, and I just kind of go, oh, right, I'm a little bit bigger than this.
Mm-hmm.
And I can feel myself sort of grow
mm-hmm.
an inch,
mm-hmm.
you know? It's hard to be right-sized all the time.
Right.
And that's a skill.
That's true. Well, you know what? We are at our
holy
time.
Holy crap!
Yeah.
It's time to go!
Yeah. We got excited on this one.
I have no notes. I don't know what I'm going to say. And then all of a sudden, I couldn't stop talking.
I knew that was going to happen. Cheesy, woo.
Sorry.
It's okay. I think it was great. And obviously next week we will be doing protection.
Magic and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we will see you next week.
Next week. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Witch, The Priestess, and The Cauldron, a radio podcast on the LMC Radio Network. Our podcast airs live every Friday at 6 p.m. Pacific and will be available for download. Questions or comments on this show or ideas for upcoming shows can be sent to our website, and that's at www.witchpriestesscauldron.com. Again, that's witchpriestesscauldron.com. On behalf of Elvira, Phoenix, Alan, and myself, Gwion Raven, a big merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Blessed be.
Yeah.
If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine. If you have an appetite for fun, then the Disney California Adventure Food and Wine Festival is the place to be. March 2nd through April 12th, only at the Disneyland Resort. Enjoy deliciously fresh food, California wines, craft beers, specialty cocktails, live music, and more. All served up with a dash of Disney magic. Get more details at disneyland.com/foodandwine.